I have some final thoughts to share about Bills versus Browns, an injury update with Dr. Kyle Trimble, and of course, my predictions for Sunday are all coming your way today on Locked On Bills.
You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Friday to you, and thank you for making Locked On Bills your first listen every day. And as a reminder to you, we are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Today's episode of Locked On Bills is sponsored by SimpliSafe Home Security. With Fast Protect technology exclusively from SimpliSafe, 24/7 monitoring agents capture evidence to accurately verify a threat for faster police response. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. Visit simplisafe.com/lockedonNFL to learn more. Well, folks, this is the last time we're going to have a chance to talk before the Bills face the Browns on Sunday. Now, there is a level of uncertainty regarding this game in terms of where it's going to be played. And as of the recording of this podcast at 3:45 p.m. on Thursday afternoon, November 17th, we don't know if the game is going to be played in Western New York or somewhere else. Somewhere else most likely being Detroit. And so on one hand, you become very disappointed that the Bills would lose an actual home game, especially because this is a year where they have 9 road games and 8 home games. And you never want to see the Bills not play their home games in Orchard Park. I hate that being removed from the fan base. I know that there's probably people traveling in for the game, and it throws a wrench in a lot of plans. I can only imagine the logistical nightmare that exists right now. However, if it is played in Detroit, it might not be a bad thing for the Bills, especially if the game would have to be played in snowy, windy conditions. That's going to favor the Browns. They have Nick Chubb. They have the physical offensive line. They're a better rushing offense than the Bills. Now, they have a very poor run defense, but also it takes away from the Bills' opportunities to really throw the football, which is what they do best. And so this game being played in Detroit probably could be a good thing for the Bills, just given the Browns and the way that they play football and what they do best and what the Bills do best. So we'll find out where that's played. You probably know by the time you're listening to this, but wanted to kind of address that right here off the bat. The next thing I want to talk about is the Bills offense. And we'll start by looking at that through the lens of Gabriel Davis and Josh Allen, and then kind of have what I want to call a reality check here. Starting with Gabriel Davis. And I've talked a lot about Gabriel Davis, obviously, on this podcast, not just this year, but since he's become a member of the team. And we've went through this journey with Gabe and really became excited about him as a rookie and then as a second-year player, especially with what he did in the playoffs against the Chiefs. And him being that fourth or fifth option in the passing game has really provided some really exciting moments for him, and you loved what he brought to the team as an X factor. Well, now he's no longer an X factor. He's the Bills' number two receiver. And we talked this offseason about what that would look like, and we can't just assume that him taking on the number two job leads to the same production that he's had in the past, just across a larger volume of opportunity. There's something to be said for his skill set, good and bad, right? A guy that has size and has that ability to win down the field with ball skills, and he leads the NFL right now in yards per catch, and it's not particularly close. He's provided this team with a lot of big plays. But lately, we're a lot more focused on how he's kind of hurt the team, right? And he's not winning as much in contested situations, and his limited route tree is impacting the offense. And you know, Josh Allen's thrown a lot of interceptions when targeting Gabriel Davis. So let's make that very real. Since the Pittsburgh game, Josh Allen has thrown 7 interceptions. 5 of those interceptions have come when targeting Gabriel Davis. This season for Josh Allen, when he targets Gabriel Davis, Josh Allen is 24 for 47, which is not a very good completion percentage, 544 yards, 5 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and a passer rating of 88.7. Also keeping in mind that within those 47 targets, Gabe Davis has a drop rate of over 14%, 14.3%. And so I find that all very interesting because Josh has typically had a lot of success throwing the football to Gabriel Davis. Now is the number 2, commanding a higher volume, having more attention from opposing defenses and players. It's a different ballgame. So let's bring this back to the interceptions, right? This is a quote from Josh Allen this week that was pretty revealing to me. And actually, for as discouraging as the quote is, I become encouraged because it sounds like Josh knows exactly what he needs to do. Josh Allen this week said, and this is regarding to the interceptions and all that type of stuff. He said, It's that constant. I can make a play or I can trust somebody else to make a play that I've battled with my entire football career and trying to do too much sometimes. It'll hurt you. It's not hard to try to tweak that mindset of trusting the other guys around me, taking the check down when it's there and just making the smart play. Josh Allen tells us right there that he's always having this internal struggle of, you know, I can make a play, right? I can do it. And sometimes that hurts the team because he tries to do too much and doesn't necessarily always make the smart play. And Josh is being typical Josh. He's not going to tell you that the spacing on a route combination was off or a route was flat and a guy wasn't where he was supposed to be or a ball tips off of another guy's hand and it resulted in an interception. He's accountable. He's not going to throw people under the bus. He's going to tell you, look, I have to make the smart play. When in reality, I can promise you there's a lot of that other stuff, those excuses, if you will, that I can say, but Josh Allen can't. But taking him at his word, I think there's some truth to that. And I think about some of the big moments that Josh Allen has had in 2020 and in 2021, and they have come targeting Gabriel Davis. So when you think about that and consider what Josh told us, it adds up. Josh is resorting to something that's kind of worked for him in the past when he's looking for a big moment. And Gabe's let him down, whether it's been some drops, whether it's been not being on the same page. And some of that's on Josh too, right? I don't put that all on Gabe. If Josh Allen throws that ball, the last play of the game against Minnesota, if he throws that to the back 5 yards of the end zone, I think the Bills probably win the game. It was a bad ball by Josh. I would argue that the route from Gabe was pretty flat. So I could go through this and we can dissect it, but the bottom line here is one of the most important components of the Bills' offense not having the situationally bad moments that have really cost this football team is Josh Allen and Gabriel Davis kind of getting on the same page. These dudes have to get on the same page and kind of work this out because the bad stuff that's happening when Josh Allen throws the football, it's coming when he's targeting Gabe Davis. Like I said, since the Pittsburgh game, Josh Allen has thrown 7 interceptions, 5 of them when targeting Gabriel Davis. They got to get on the same page. And I think that really, really reduces the amount of turnovers that the Bills on offense commit. But I want to have a little dose of reality here, right? I want to just throw some metrics at you regarding the 2022 Buffalo Bills offense. The Bills offense is number 1 in yards per game. They're number 2 in scoring. They're number 2 in first downs. They're number 1 in third down conversion percentage. They're number 2 in passing yards per game. They're number 10 in rushing yards per game. They're number 3 in rushing yards per attempt. 45.3% of drives end in a score. That's number 2 in the NFL. Those are good numbers. Those are really good numbers. And we're talking about numbers that are towards the top of the league, right there at the top of the league in very meaningful numbers. Yards, scoring, passing, third down conversions, top 3 in rushing yards per attempt. And we're talking about those numbers being true in the first 9 games for a first-time offensive coordinator in Ken Dorsey. Take a second and process that. A lot of good's happening here for this offense. Situationally, can they be better? Yes. Can the red zone be better? Yes. Can short yardage be better? Yes. Can they turn over the ball less? Absolutely. But let's not lose sight of the good here, folks. There's a lot of panic out there. A lot of panic out there. I don't engage in a lot of it on social media, but I see it. The narratives out there about the Bills not having an ideal slot receiver or an ideal number 2 receiver, and the guards are bad and they can't run block, and Dawson Knox needs to be more involved. Yes, there's a lot of truth to that, and that deserves a lot of discussion, but a reality check here, please. The Bills are number 1 in yards per game. They're number 2 in scoring points. They're number 2 in first downs. They're number 1 in third down conversion percentage. They're number 2 in passing yards per game, number 10 in rushing yards per game, number 3 in rushing yards per attempt, and they score on 45.3% of their drives, which is number 2 in the NFL. So we are focusing on the bad. Of course, the Bills lost 2 games in a row. They played really 2.5 games in a row now that didn't look like the Bills in the way that we want them to. The margins are slim, but let's be mindful of the good that is happening here and the production of this offense and what it's capable of and what it's told us over the last several years in terms of what it can be. The Bills have had a very unfortunate lull seemingly every year under Sean McDermott, and he does need to examine his operation and figure out why that has happened. But the sky's not falling. Not yet, at least. Now, maybe the Bills will continue to be a situational, sloppy football team, and we have to have a different discussion. But let's let this thing play out. Let's play all these games and see what happens. Because I like what the Bills have. I do. And I think the issues that they have are correctable. And in spite of not having the ideal number 2 or the ideal slot or not having great guard play or run blocking or wishing Dawson Knox got more involved and turning over the ball so much, they're doing a lot of very, very high-level stuff in the first 9 games of a first-time offensive coordinator. Now, I know that I haven't said a whole lot about the Bills and the Browns here in this opening segment, but I'll be honest with you. I have my final thought about Bills and Browns. It's Nick Chubb and Myles Garrett. Probably the best running back in the NFL. I've raved about him all week behind a really good offensive line. Wyatt Teller's practicing. Looks like they're going to be full strength there. David Njoku has gotten back on the practice field this week. It feels like they're going to be pretty healthy. And then Myles Garrett. Dude's an alien. Absolute problem on the field. I feel like if you focus your efforts this week on figuring out how you can defend those players the best you can or neutralize them the best you can, I think that's where my mind would be all week long if I'm Sean McDermott, is how do you limit Nick Chubb and how do you limit Myles Garrett? Those guys are awesome players. And, you know, the Browns have a talent elsewhere and there's other things to be concerned about. But when I think about this game, it's Nick Chubb and Myles Garrett. That's where my mind is at. Today's episode is brought to you by Tommy John. Getting stuck in Black Friday crowds? Super uncomfortable. Shopping Tommy John's Black Friday sale from your couch? Super duper comfortable. When you can give your loved ones Tommy John, they're that much more comfortable so they can do everything better. Shop Tommy John's Black Friday sale right now and give the gift of comfort to everyone on your list, including yourself, with brand new Tommy John underwear, loungewear, and pajamas. With over 18 million pairs sold, giving Tommy John has become a holiday tradition. In fact, 97% of men and women love getting a gift from Tommy John. That's why Tommy John doesn't have customers. They have fanatics. I love wearing my Tommy John because it's so comfortable. In fact, every pair is backed by Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. You can shop Tommy John's Black Friday sale going on right now and get 30% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/lockedon. That's 30% off everything now at TommyJohn.com/lockedon. TommyJohn.com/lockedon. See site for details. Joined now by Dr. Kyle Trimble. He's a doctor of physical therapy. He runs BangedUpBills.com. You can follow him on Twitter at BangedUpBills. He joins us each week to talk injuries. And so that's what we're going to do right now. And man, I kind of feel like this is a little bit better looking report. There's still some big names. There's stuff to get through, but I don't feel overwhelmed going into a conversation with you like I have for most of the season. But let's start with the big stuff here. We got a couple of elbows to talk about. One for quarterback Josh Allen, who played. So there's that. I'm so kind of interested in any of your observations from him playing and what we've learned since we talked last, and we've heard more from Josh and we've heard from Coach McDermott and the thought process all there. So let's talk about Josh Allen a little bit. And then there's another elbow that's interesting to me, and that's the one on Jordan Poyer. Because when I saw that elbow on video a couple weeks ago, I thought, oh my God, that's not what an elbow looks like. I wasn't feeling good. As it would turn out, he's been limited in practice this week. Maybe a chance he plays. So I'll turn it over to you for Josh Allen's elbow and Jordan Poyer's elbow.
Yeah. So hit on Josh Allen. I was on here last week talking about how he's going to miss multiple games based off of what we thought was the reports were leading toward there. And then even after we got done with the recording, there was more reports coming out. There was a 10% tear in his elbow that he wasn't going to play. And there was just all leaning toward him sitting out for some time. And then 4 p.m. hits on Saturday. Matt Barkley's not elevated, and Josh Allen's going to play. And then he, you know, drug out the suspense a little bit more on game day when he was delayed in coming out there. So in a sense, yeah, I was wrong in terms of thinking that he was going to miss multiple games, because obviously he didn't. But there's been some clues after the fact that have shown that, hey, the team is managing this pretty well. And the injury is still very real. You know, I think that I did see a lot of people were like, well, you know, maybe it was just ulnar nerve, or maybe it was just wasn't as bad and they overblown it. Josh Allen said on Kyle Brandt's Basement podcast that early in the week, the doctors really didn't think he was going to play. He spent a ton of time in the hyperbaric chamber, which is going to bring oxygen to the healing tissue and allow that to get right as much as possible. He was in the training room constantly doing anything, modality, stretching, strengthening, anything he'd do to get that grip strength up there. And I'm impressed by what he was able to do. I think if you bring any other of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL with that injury, probably most of them don't play. The only ones I think maybe might play is Patrick Mahomes, maybe Justin Herbert. Most of them others probably don't play, at least sit that out to let themselves get right there. So I'm impressed that he's able to play through that despite what we were seeing, all those breadcrumbs throughout the week saying that, hey, this isn't looking good. He's able to play through it, but then it's still not right, because even then, we're seeing him limited in practice. We're not seeing him throw in practice. We're not seeing him take unnecessary reps, anything that could stress the elbow and get that thing angry. So my assessment was correct. It's just that he was an outlier in terms of being able to play through the injury despite everything. I mean, I'm impressed. I want to be right, but I'm impressed overall. And looking back at how the Vikings and the Bills and everything went with that, Josh Allen, even injured, gave you the best shot to win that game, and they almost did it. So it's impressive that he was able to play, and I'm just gonna keep highlighting that because it is. So we'll see how things look coming forward there. But he even said that the injury is gonna be there, and he's gonna know it's eventually gonna get better, but he has to be smart about it. I did like that the Bills, they had him run out of shotgun all but two plays in that entire game. They gave him more time to find his target. That allowed him to move around a little bit more. And he only saw two sacks and like six runs at some point. So he didn't stress the elbow in any way. But it's also worth noting that he can still injure the elbow, and not to be alarmist, but he can if he has the same type of mechanism. So I'm looking for the Bills to have a good offensive line protection again, give him that space he needs, and then hopefully he can protect the elbow when he's, you know, leading into running and everything else there. But he also did say that he has to take some off his throws and that the speed. So hopefully he continue working through, he avoids those big hits. And then this is a, you know, history in terms of what look at the injury, like all the other ones have. So I'm going to take a breath and then we're going to go into Jordan Poyer. So Jordan Poyer, he suffered the elbow injury left side against the Packers in week 8. He had missed the past 2 games, and that elbow was looking pretty gnarly on Twitter. John Scott of Spectrum News had noted that he had video showing us looking at bursitis in the elbow, wasn't able to fully extend the elbow, and he just wasn't looking good. But this week he's stuff on Thursday and really start initiating contact. I question how effective he's gonna be in wrapping up the elbow, or excuse me, wrapping up his tackle with the elbow, but he does have the right side to use, and he's smart enough to maximize his angles and hit more than having to really use the elbow there. I am concerned that he might be limited a little bit in the second half of the game, but we'll see how it goes, and hopefully he can just be more of a coverage safety rather than having to deliver blows and hits all the time. So I'm hopeful that he plays. I don't see why he wouldn't based off what we're seeing, but I am concerned, like I am for Hallen, for re-injury, just because, you know, that direct trauma to that area in the first place.
Yeah, it's been tough to kind of watch he's missed 4 games. The Bills have lost 3 of those games, and you go back to each one of them, whether it's the Miami game and them giving up a 3rd and 22, and you think to yourself, well, man, if Jordan Poyer's in the middle of the field, maybe that doesn't happen. You go to the Jets game and you're like, man, they really kind of snatched the Bills' soul there on that last drive, and maybe that doesn't happen if Jordan Poyer's in there. And we're thinking all about the angles and missed tackles by Jaquan Johnson, and maybe that game goes differently with Poyer. And then, of course, last week against the Vikings, whether it's the 71-yard run by Dalvin Cook where Cam Lewis didn't have the angle, or C.J. Ham's rushing touchdown, you're thinking to yourself, wow, Jordan Poyer may have been the difference in all 3 of the Bills' losses. As much as we're talking about turnovers and everything else, it's like, man, if 21 was out there, maybe that stuff doesn't happen. And that's just scratching the surface of the potential impact. So I'm excited. I hope it works out, man. I really do. It could mean a lot for this defense the rest of the way. Let's shift gears now to Tremaine Edmonds. And I'm going to kind of layer a bunch of stuff together here so you can catch your breath here. And hopefully I piece this together correctly. But Tremaine Edmonds, he played in the first half against Minnesota. He didn't play in the second half. And he hasn't practiced all week. To this point, we're recording on Thursday night. We don't know what happens on Friday. And the Bills may not even practice on Friday based on the weather and all that. But it's a groin slash heel injury designation. Again, missed the second half against Minnesota, hasn't practiced this week. And then you look at the transactions that the Bills have made, and there's some interesting things that have happened recently. One of them being Jake Kumerow, wide receiver, going to the injured reserve. And I don't know what the severity is there, but I know he'll miss at least 4 weeks. Well, simultaneously, they claimed AJ Klein, who everybody knows AJ Klein. He's been on the team for the last couple of years, who was waived by the Bears. So now AJ Klein's back, and you're like, okay, well, now they got a lot of linebackers and Tremaine Edmonds is hurt. Now you're only with Kumerow going to injured reserve, you only have 4 receivers, which is a very low number. The Bills typically usually have 6 of those. And you've also seen the team start the 21-day window for Marquez Stevenson to practice and be activated. And so there's a lot of layers here. I'm sure there's some connection to all of it, but I think what I'm most interested in hearing from you is your thoughts on Tremaine and if Marquez Stevenson could potentially be on this roster sooner rather than later, considering they only have 4 guys on the team that play wide receiver right now.
They're all excellent points. I think you did tie it together pretty good here. So we'll go back to Tremaine Edmonds, like you said there. He played the first half of the contest against Minnesota Vikings. I didn't think he would play just because he was do not participate Wednesday and Thursday, then we'll limit on Friday. But going back to like what we talked about with Allen, and then we even see the impact Poyer has, when Tremaine Edmonds was in there, there was a notable difference on how the defense played versus when he wasn't in there. Like it was like night and day. And so you can see why, hey, you got to bring all your big guns to a game like this. And it all makes sense now. They knew that was a game they could win and with their best players available, even injured. That's why he played. It's unfortunate that he suffered the groin strain. I thought he suffered the groin strain like with 14 seconds left in the second quarter. He tried to go up and bat a pass and kind of came down. It wasn't really funny, but I can't remember if he stayed in for more play or if that was it, but then he didn't return for the second half. But that was just like Minnesota said, hey, we're going to just take over and go off from that there. No one you're going against the Browns team who are going to be more run heavy. I don't know if Edmonds is going to be out there just because a lot of their injuries, the soft tissue ones, they don't have a recurrence of them later on. So they might suffer the injury. They might miss a time, but then they're not going to trot them back out there unless it was a playoffs, which is a different beast altogether. So I want to say don't play them against the Browns so that you can play them against the Lions or give them that whole week off there to get right for that final stretch there. Knowing that you brought AJ Klein in, and then you also have Tyrell Dodson, you got Terrell Bernard, who could probably work in there some way. Tyler Matakiewicz, you have options there. So would I want to see Tremaine Edmonds play? Absolutely. But you have to look for the long-term picture. And I feel like that might be the best case is to give that week off, especially since who you're playing. But hey, I'm just speculating at this point. So, and then the final part of that with the conversation with Marquez Stevenson, he did post up on his Instagram, his story of his kind of return there. And he had a video of him getting the bandages off, and he had stitches on the lateral aspect of his right foot. And that was a foot that we knew he had injured because we saw him on the scooter with the boot on it. And it was on the lateral aspect up toward the pinky toe, which is where the fifth metatarsal is at, suggesting a Jones fracture. And considering the timeline he's been on, surgery in early August, and then he had rehab the entire time, made the active roster, then IR. It's been about 15 weeks out since the surgery, and we've been seeing him ramp up doing sprinting and kind of out at practice here and there. So based off of the lack of wide receivers we have available, Isaiah McKenzie was dealing with an illness this week. We could see Stevenson return probably more as an offensive player. We should see some special teams, but if I recall correctly, he doesn't do the same responsibilities on special teams as Kumaro does, correct?
Yeah, the Kumaro's very good at covering kicks and punts, and Stevenson's more of a return guy, not really a skill set that you would have doing the same type of stuff.
Absolutely. And then we also remember, too, Stevenson came back around this time last year. I think it was on Thanksgiving game, and he didn't require a ton of ramp-up time. Like, he was doing his rehab, everything else with that, but then I think once they activated him on the 21-day window, they got him right up to the roster right away if they had a spot for him. So right now they don't, but things could change in the next, you know, few days here where they do cut somebody or move some things around.
You know what? That's a good poll there, remembering him being activated for Thanksgiving. Cause now that you've said that, I think to myself and remind myself of that Saints game where I'm watching Marquez Stevenson being the friggin' return guy. And I was nervous. So that was a good memory poll. That was outstanding. The last thing I want to ask you about and really just see what you have to say about this is the Trey White situation. Another week goes by and Trey White doesn't play. And we're talking about multiple weeks now past that activation window where, you know, they had the opportunity to do something different or activate him later. There had to be some level of anticipation that he would play by now, just based on how the timing aligns here. I mean, you didn't activate Trey White for him to be a healthy scratch now 2 weeks in a row. And so look, I don't want to, you know, try to draw water from a rock here, but do you have any thoughts here on this situation?
I do. The only reason I want to dig into this a little bit is because the media on Monday was asking him, I believe it might have been Jay Skursky of the Buffalo News is asking about the mental versus physical aspect of that. And of course, Sean McDermott's going to deflect and he's not going to really dig too much into that. But McDermott had said some stuff on Wednesday, and I'm paraphrasing here. He was saying that it's like coming out of training camp and try to remember how he said it, but it's like you have certain goals and sometimes you have to just kind of get up to get to those goals or you're not going to have that ramp up time or you're not going to have the ability to kind of really work your way up there. It's kind of a put up or shut up a mentality. And I think that's kind of how I read it. And if it's not, then, you know, that's just my interpretation. But I think at some point they're going to say, hey, you have to get out there and play. And if it is indeed a mental thing, I can understand that. I've dealt with that plenty of times in my physical therapy career. I've dealt with that as an athlete with my sports injuries in high school. It's hard to go back out there when you've had an injury that drastically altered how you operated. I mean, he talked about the depression he was in. He talked about how it kind of threw him out of his loop for a while. He's able to do things with his kids and whatnot. And I think he can get back in the routine, but trusting that leg again, or knowing that he can return at the same level as he did before, is really, you have to find that by yourself. You can't have somebody tell you, oh, you're Trey White, you're going back to be all pro. Well, it's not going to be. And then that's where it's frustrating to say, hey, I can perform better and I'm not. I'm sure he's going through some visualization things where like you kind of visualize what you're doing on the field and do it. I'm sure he's going through some just talking with the training staff, if there's any psychologists or you know, people that to help him talk him through his fears, if there are any with that. There's a lot of resources he has available to himself. But I think it really just comes down to just how do you trust that this isn't going to happen again? And I've had that people with motor vehicle accidents to go back to driving. I've had people when they've been falling, or if they've had a scare such as a stroke or something like that, they worry that those activities that they're going to do is going to lead to that result again. And that sometimes it does happen. A lot of times it doesn't there, but it's just trying to understand that, hey, this was a one-off thing. This doesn't have to happen again just because it's in my mind. So if that's the case, have him take the time he wants to get back. I know the team's getting anxious. I know the fans are getting anxious, but that's not something you can rush back, because if you're not confident in your abilities, you're not going to play with confidence and you're going to second guess yourself. And then that's where injury can occur. So whatever he's going through, I want him to get right and come back out there. Maybe he does the Bob Sanders approach. If you recall, Bob Sanders in 2006 missed most of the season with different injuries, came back in the last quarter of the season, and then was healthy for playoffs, helped the Colts win the Super Bowl. I know Bob Sanders was a safety, but they're both secondary players. Maybe this happens again for the Bills here. So,
hey, you know, everybody likes a good parallel story, and sign me up for that one. I'll tell you that right now. So I appreciate your insight there. I know that's not an easy thing to kind of talk through, and you know, certainly there's some speculation on your behalf there. You're not saying that's exactly what's going on with Trey, but you know, certainly a reasonable possibility is you try to add things up here, right? What is the Bruce Nolan and Occam's razor? Here we are again, right? So apply it however that goes. I'm no philosopher here, so I'm not going to try to get too deep into that, but I certainly think it's worth talking about, and I appreciate you you sharing that like you do all the information every week. Let's hope for another continued good trend here. I know it's a short week, so the Bills can't really afford to fool around on the injury front. I know that they don't have that choice, but fingers crossed for a healthy week, and then the Bills get into Thanksgiving with a nice 2-game win streak, and then we take on the Patriots, and everybody's excited about the team again. But Dr. Kyle, thanks for what you do here every week on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
BetOnline.net is your number one source for sports betting information, stats, news, and analysis. You can get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from football to basketball to soccer and esports. They've got it all over at BetOnline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, you can find those at BetOnline as well. They're always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fix. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more. It's BetOnline. And it's where the game starts. Bills Mafia, we all know what that sound is. It's the glorious sound of a table breaking in half from a body slam. And it's something Bills fans do best. Now listen to this. You know what that sound is? It's a chip breaking. Mid-dip in guacamole, not so glorious. The thing is, some things are meant to be broken, like tables at tailgates. But chips and dips? Definitely not. That's why the team at Zach's Mighty Tortilla Chips set out to create a chip that can actually handle dips without breaking. Talk about game-changing. I love these chips. My wife and I, we have dips all the time. In fact, we had chili, which I know is not a dip, but we love to have tortilla chips with our chili. Of course, buffalo chicken dip, artichoke dip, spinach dip, guacamole. And we never have to worry about them breaking in half. They're sturdy, they're crunchy, and they're delicious, and they're perfectly seasoned and made from organic Flint corn grown in upstate New York. You can find Zach's Mighty Tortilla Chips at all Wegmans locations in the chip aisle. Zach's Mighty, break tables, not chips. All right, let's do some predictions here to close out the week here on the podcast. Obviously, the weather makes this kind of challenging, you know, especially if the game's played in Buffalo, under the elements. You know, all bets are always off whenever that happens. But I'm going to kind of operate under the assumption that they're either playing in Detroit or it's reasonably manageable in Buffalo and they can play a normal football game. So let's do it. Number one, Nyheim Hines makes an impact in this game. And I don't know how to measure that, but we'll know. And normally I come to you with, this player will do this thing, and it's black and white. They either do it or they don't. But I'll tell you this. I predict he makes an impact in this game. I don't know exactly how to measure that in terms of he'll have X amount of touches or he'll have a big punt return or something like that. But I will tell you this. I will be able to hypothetically look you in the eye when reviewing these predictions for the postgame pod, and we will be able to agree that he either did or did not make an impact in the football game. And the reason I think something good's coming from Nyheim Hines this week is, first of all, we know that he's going to be the Bills' punt returner. And the Browns have struggled to cover punts this year. They're allowing 16 yards per punt return, which is dead last in the NFL. And so I think there's going to be some opportunities there for Nyheim. But also, he's now had a little bit of time to acclimate on the offense, and you've seen him on the field a little bit more and more. And, you know, not that he's touched the ball a ton, but I think that they want to. Obviously, they traded for this guy, and I expect him to start making an impact this week against Cleveland. Again, I'm not sure exactly how to measure that, but we'll know. We'll know. Number two, I'm predicting a season high for rushing yards from Devin Singletary. His current high is 85 yards against the Chiefs. And I think he'll have 86 yards or more. In fact, it's a pretty bold prediction because that's only happened 8 times in his career. Only 8 times has Devin Singletary gained more than 85 rushing yards in a game, and he's been on the Bills for now 3.5 seasons. So give me a season high for rushing yards from Devin Singletary, so 86 yards or more against the Browns. Number three, I am predicting 0 interceptions thrown by Josh Allen. Josh knows that this needs to be fixed. I trust him to fix it. And the Browns aren't the team that's gotten a lot of interceptions this year. They only have 3 on the season. So here's your opportunity, Josh. I think this will be a good start for him taking care of the football to the level that we need him to and have come to enjoy him doing, right? I know Josh has never been perfect in taking care of the football, but he's never been the league's worst. And that's where the Bills offense is right now. So I'm predicting 0 interceptions from Josh Allen on Sunday. Number 4, I predict that the Bills win the coin toss. The Bills have lost 10 of the last 11 coin tosses. The only one that they won was this year against Baltimore. And of course, the Bills chose to receive the football trying to get ahead of the weather that was coming for the Baltimore game. Now this... This is kind of law of averages, right? The Bills can't just continue to not win coin tosses, right? I mean, I guess there's no law against it, but come on now. 10 of 11? They're due. And then the last thing is, do I think the Bills win this game? You're damn right I do. I think the Bills win. They get to 7-3. I think they're the better team. They're better on defense. They have the better quarterback. The Bills are coming off consecutive losses. Could they really drop a third straight? I mean, they could. Yeah, it's possible. But I think they're going to be hungry and ready to take care of their business. And I think what it really comes down to is I think the Bills are going to be able to score points in this game. And that's a nightmare for Cleveland, who needs to run the football and rely on Nick Chubb. And if Jacoby Brissett has to go toe-to-toe with Josh Allen, I like 17 in the red, white, and blue. So put me down for a Bills win on Sunday, whether that's in Detroit or in Orchard Park. All right, folks, well, the hay is in the barn. We've done all we can here to prepare for this football game. The only thing that's left is for the Bills to go out there and score more points against the Browns when it's all said and done. And I think we all know that we need a victory Monday, so I need to be able to deliver that to you for the next time that we talk. So go, Bills. Let's get that done and feel good about this football team once again. I think a nice win will get this season back on track and will get us back on track in terms of our mindset for this football team. And then you got a nice opportunity to turn around and win another one playing on Thanksgiving against Detroit. So a nice 2-game win streak here to get to 8-3 before you have a bunch of divisional games, right? You've got New England and the Jets again and the Dolphins again. And so get these 2 games sorted out the way that you need to and go on the stretch run and We'll have a lot of fun covering it the rest of the way here on the podcast. So don't miss anything. Make sure that you're subscribed. We'd love it if you took a second to rate, review, and share the podcast. Have a great weekend. Go Bills. And I look forward to catching up with you again on Monday.